laugh at this anymore. You used to call the Maple Leafs and Montreal Canadiens historic rivals, and they were that. They were rivals because of the history.
Ancient history, mostly, by the way.
Yeah, ancient history and the history of those franchises have been around for a long time. That's
yes.
it.
Yes, and they were two of six, so that that would narrow things down a fair bit, right? And they were only two in this entire country, so that narrowed things down. So, yeah, there are a lot of good reasons for the historic rivalry, yes.
Yeah, but now it's a real, honest-to-goodness rivalry. It's just one playoff series, I guess, and, you know, a bunch of regular season matchups, which had varying levels of import and animosity and intrigue and entertainment value.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, and some of the principals that were doing the agitating are no longer there. Like Corey Perry, not going to be playing tonight because he doesn't play for the Montreal Canadiens anymore.
True.
He's in Tampa, the Lightning. So there'll be, although they already got retribution for the John Tavares knee, apparently, when Nick Foligno had to fight him. But yeah, this really, I guess for the first time in recent memory, feels like a rivalry today. And who knows, these two teams could go in divergent paths. The regular season, the next time they face off, it might be a different feeling. I would just say that today it feels a little bit different.
Yeah, no, this is pretty fresh, right? It's
yeah.
But it's as fresh as it's been in terms of kind of a real, honest to God rivalry, kind of a real, like, you've got to go way back, because when they played in the playoffs last year, we were all kind of going, when was the last time they played a playoff series mm-hmm. against each other? And it was ancient history, and because they never. You know, it's through decades, they never really lined up. You know, when the Leafs were good in those years when they had the rivalry with the Senators, for instance, you know, that, like, Montreal was never part of that conversation. So, yeah, this kind of, you know, it kind of came out of the blue, those unusual circumstances. And who knew that series would turn into what it turned into?
Yeah, not me. not after four games of that thing. I certainly wouldn't have predicted the way the final three games went. First time they've faced off since that Game 7 tonight at Scotiabank Arena. Again, tickets still available somehow. Let's talk to Renaud Lavoie, our friend of TVA Sports, who is down at Scotiabank Arena getting ready for this game. How's it going, Ren?
I'm pretty good. It's exciting, right, to see yes. hockey back and to see fans in the stands, I think, is even better.
Absolutely. And even if it's not quite a full house, more than whatever, the 9,000 they were having for those
yeah.
preseason games. So, what's your take on this rivalry now, Ren, after the seven games yeah. that they played last year in the postseason?
That's a great question. To be honest with you, that's something that I was thinking about today. If you look at, you know, both teams, the way they're built, hockey changed, right? I believe hockey really changed over the years. Some are going to say for the better. Some are going to miss the good old days, I guess. But, you know, the rivalry is totally different now. I don't see a player trying to, get involved in any fight. Obviously, there are some emotions on the ice. It's still there. But when you look at the way both GMs build their teams, that's an aspect that's not really there if you look at it. Even a guy like Wayne Simmons, you're going to tell me that Wayne can do damages. And I know that he dropped the gloves a couple of times versus a Ben Chiarot. But, you know, I don't see a lot of bad blood. I see players who really want to win, especially tonight. It's opening night for both teams. And so the emotions are going to be high, but I don't expect that we'll have a hearing after the game because there was a cheap shot or anything out of the ordinary.
Ren, last time we had you on was the day of the Carey Price announcement. And obviously, you know, people yeah. in Montreal, you know, the whole hockey world is pretty traumatized, I think, but especially I would think the fans yeah. in Montreal. Since then, you know, again, people have had, the chance to kind of get used to that news. I guess since then, otherwise news, we've had the announcement of the Nick Suzuki contract, which
yeah.
is, about the future of that franchise and one of the bright young talents. But
yep.
I just wonder kind of what, take the temperature of the Montreal fan base right now. You know, coming off a Stanley Cup final appearance that no one expected, having to yeah. process the whole Carey Price thing this spring, and then looking ahead to this season. You know, what's the heartbeat like right now?
Well, there's a lot of question marks, right? You have eight players on the injured reserve list. You have to include Carey Price, and you have to include Shea Weber, who's not going to play this season. So people are looking at the Canadiens right now and are asking, are they for real? Are they ready? To I guess, surprise the rest of the NHL. So there's a lot of doubts, which is totally normal. One thing for me, and we've been working together for how many years now, and one thing that I've always mentioned is goaltending.
Mm-hmm.
So personally, I have my doubts on Jake Allen, but there's a but. Maybe 5-6 years ago, he was the number one goalie with the St. Louis Blues. He played 120 games in two seasons. He won 60 games. I think just there, you see that he's capable of, you know, helping his team. He had an average of 2.5 during, that quote-unquote era where he was number one goalie with a saving percentage of 9.10. I mean, those are good numbers, right? But for the first time, I think, in a long time, all the pressure is on his shoulders. So The good news is Carey Price was never at training camp. Well, he was, but he was skating on his own for a few days only to start training camp. After that, I think that the coaching staff went to him and say, not only you need to prepare for game one, but you need to think, and that's just regarding Carey Price injury, you need to believe or think or prepare that you're going to be the starter at least for the majority of October. So because of that, I think that Jake Allen is well prepared, is a veteran. He knows what he needs to do, okay? Can Jake Allen surprise, the Montreal Canadiens fans? Probably. I think he can. One thing that's really important is he's not going to play tomorrow in Buffalo, okay? That's for sure. And he's going to play Saturday in Montreal. So he needs to play two games per week. I'll push a third game, but he's not the type of goaltender that can play like Carey did. Obviously, he's a bigger body. So if Jake Allen can do it, yes, I believe that there'll be a lot of surprises. But if not, you know, there's not a lot of people who believes that the Canes are going to make the playoffs. Mm. So I know it's easy to say. It's really tough on Jake Allen, but if Jake is capable of doing some key saves night after night, I like the Canadiens' chances.
Well, I like the Canadiens' chances too. If Nick Suzuki carries over the postseason performance and, you know, continues to build off the two full seasons in the National Hockey League, but Steven mentioned the extension, and it's, I think, one that is viewed very favorably by anybody that looks at it and what he's produced and how old he is and what he could be and the role he plays on this team. But the expectations change when you sign an 8-year deal of that size. Ren, how is Nick Suzuki going to be judged performance-wise this year after signing that extension?
You know what? We asked that question to Brendan Gallagher because, Brendan signed a big deal last season, deal that's going to start tonight, obviously. But he signed a 6-year deal for a $22 million before that. And even if it's less money, it's still a lot of money. And he mentioned that, you know, when you're a young player, you need to adjust. You need to make sure that, you're not putting too much pressure on yourself. But there'll be an adjustment period. No doubts about that. But that contract's going to kick in only next season, right? It's not going to kick in this year. He's still on his rookie contract. So the paycheck is going to be the same in a way. So if there's one thing about Nick Suzuki is his stress level is really low. If it's high, we don't see it. He's even keel. He's a guy who is not saying much. I think he's the next captain, by the way, of the Montreal Canadiens. I believe that he's going to have a lot of pressure because of his contract. And when the Canes are going to look at him and say, okay, you can deal with the pressure of your contract, the next step is we want you to be our guy. We want you to be the leader inside that dressing room. So that's the type of player that I believe he is, to be honest with you. And I have personally no concerns about Nick Suzuki because he's doing the things the right way. And he arrived in the NHL the right way, by the way.
Shea Weber left pieces himself, you know, on the ice last year, right? It was kind of and we may never see him again. But it was, you know, it was a valiant performance for sure, just to get through that season for him. And incredibly, you know, and again, I think people maybe appreciate him more than they, I hope they do. Unfair to suggest anybody's going to kind of fill his boots, you know, his role on that team. But, you know, like, what's the hole that's left with Shea Weber not being there this year, Ren?
Huge. And people are going to say, well, more off the ice than on the ice. I don't believe it. I believe that Shea Weber's legacy is going to be missed big time, on and off. You know, just with the referees, the way that Shea conduct himself, there was a lot of respect between the referees and the players because of a guy like Shea Weber, first of all. Did it help? I don't know. But I'm just saying that when Shea's looking at the referee, he's never upset. He's never using words that you're not supposed to use. He's always looking at them in the eye, and he's sending his message. Believe me, that's enough. So that part is important. The other part is the way he's playing. He was still playing 23, 24, 25 minutes, blocking shots, still playing on a power play, penalty killing. He was doing it all. The way he prepared, he arrived at the practice ring early for practices, same thing for games. So he was sending the message, that's how you need to prepare, playing with tons of injuries, the leadership role, making sure that everybody's happy. When Marc Bergevin told us 3 years ago, I'm telling my players this, if you have any issue whatsoever, go see Shea Weber. Mm. He's going to take care of it. Who's that guy now? He's not there, right? So that's why I believe it's really it's going to be a big transition without him. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and at times the best player in the postseason last year. He was outstanding. Carey Price was outstanding, and they start the season without those guys, and who knows if they get them back, and they have to play the rest of the Atlantic Division and the rest of the NHL after being in that all-Canadian division. I wonder, though, with that run, and specifically beating the Toronto Maple Leafs in that series, how much equity that built up in the fan base? They get to a Stanley Cup final. Nobody expects them to. The regular season was uneven, but if things go a little bit pear-shaped here during this season with some extenuating circumstances, it's Montreal too. I understand that, but what did last season buy them?
Time, because you know, if you look at the way the training camp went, it was ugly. Not because of necessarily the way the team played, but with all the injuries. You know, there was a couple of blowouts game. It wasn't pretty at all. Nobody said anything because of what you mentioned. But if, let's say, the Montreal Canadiens didn't make the playoffs or were out of the playoffs after the first round versus the Leafs in four or five games like it was supposed to be, I think that the pressure would have been right now really, really high on everybody. So, yes, it's going to buy them time. You know, they need to adjust to what Dominique Ducharme wants. You know, I didn't mention much of Dominique Ducharme, but I saw his practices all training camp, and he's a different type of coach. I'm not saying that he's trying to reinvent the NHL. That's not the person that he is, but he's using tools that maybe sometimes we're not used to see during practices. So that's going to be interesting to see how the players are going to react. I think when you look at looking at the Canadiens right now, nobody's giving them any chances. So that's, again, how, you know, they're going to be able, I guess, to surprise a little bit everybody, because they have the right coach for that. He's going to push the players to be better, to play the right way. But if that team is making mistakes, mental mistakes, it's going to be really, really hard. So, you know, I think that playoff run was really good for the franchise. And now how long, you know, before the fans are going to be all over them, I wonder. But just with Marc Bergevin's contract situation, I guess everybody's looking at that situation, asking themselves, so what's next, right?
Before we let you go, Rand, I know you were very high on this Leafs team last season, you know, and you know, obviously that they crashed and burned in the end of that playoff series. Looking ahead for the, like, there's change, right? No Zach Hyman, the goal, you know, the goaltending change with Freddie Anderson gone. And they got a couple, you know, they do have some injuries to start the season, but, you know, with them kind of going back, you know, back into the deep end, right, with fans in the stands and playing the Tampas and the Bostons and the Floridas and the Islanders, what do you think they are this year?
You know, that's a great question because Joe Thornton is not here anymore, and you know how much I have respect, tons of respect for Joe, what he's bringing in. I believe that Joe did a really good job with the Maple Leafs. If you look at the playoffs, John Tavares was out after one period. That, for me, was, even if the Leafs played really well after for three games, that was the big difference. At the end, they missed their captain. They missed a guy who's playing really well defensively and offensively. I think it was a little easier after that for the Montreal Canadiens. So I did an interview a few minutes ago with John. He's in a really good spirit. And I know all the attention is always on Mitch, on obviously Austin, which is totally, I totally understand it. But John Tavares, for me, is the type of guy that can do a lot of damages, especially early like this in the season, end of the season, playoffs. So let's give that group another chance. Yes, there are still some question marks regarding goaltending, but Peter Mrazek, I saw Peter playing really, really well with the Hurricanes. So I'm okay with Peter Mrazek, and if Jack Campbell can be Jack Campbell again, why not? You need to give those two goalies a chance, and I guess these players a chance. But I feel like the Maple Leafs are okay, and after that, they need to be on the good side when they'll be in the playoffs again. They were really close. Believe me, they were really close. Even without John Tavares, they were really, really close. Let's be honest. So I believe the day they're gonna win that first round, they're going to be more dangerous than ever.
Yeah. We'll see if that day ever comes.
This point. It will. Come on. It will.
Okay. From your mouth to, I guess, the players' ears. Ren, we always appreciate the time. Enjoy the game tonight.
Thanks, Ren.
Have a good one, and thanks for having me again. Have a good season.
All right. Thanks, Ren. Ren Olivois, TVA Sports. Yeah, if that playoff run bought the Montreal Canadiens time, what did the Toronto Maple Leafs' lack of a playoff run do?
What's the opposite of buying time? It's, yeah.
Selling it? I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, they sold it. They got none left, is what I'm saying.
Not a lot. No. I'd say they've got about 3 months.
Yeah.
Just to, you know, yeah. No, I think the first, like, normally kind of look at the fall and hockey season and say, well, there's, you know, nothing gets decided before Christmas, and take a deep breath, and then we'll talk about the trade deadline, but.
Elliot Friedman's thing is, yeah, American Thanksgiving. That's when you can look at the standings, right?
Yeah. I think, yeah, there are going to be – we can take any of those signposts and every one of them in terms of the Leafs and expectations and performance are going to matter. And like, I know we talked about with this with Kip earlier in the show, but, yeah, there, you know, there is – if they're playing great, there will be some people who will say, yeah, well, talk to me and wake me up in April. I think it's more interesting – you know, this is kind of perverse because, you know, maybe it's just from a talk radio point of view.
I was talking about trading Morgan Riley yesterday, so it's not as perverse as that. Go ahead.
No, it's not as perverse as that. You're correct. But if it's not great, you know, if it's just a little, if it's a little underwhelming between now and, say, Christmas, I think this is going to be quite, like, I've seen a lot of, you know, Knights of the Long Knives in Toronto Maple Leafs history. There's been a few, right? This one will be fascinating. That's all I will say. This will be fascinating to see where the ire and the anxiety is directed.
Well, and it might not necessarily be fair because...
Well, like, fair is not part of this. Believe me, this is not about fair.
Yeah. Well, criticizing this team in the postseason is definitely fair.
Yes.
That's fair, right?
It's a performance-based business, yes.
Well, but not even that. It's that, and I would say specifically the last two playoff series, it's fair to criticize because before that, well, the first one against Washington, nobody was criticizing that. First one against Boston, okay, maybe a little bit, but they were the inferior team. Second one against Boston, you know, you just look at that series, and I think the Leafs might have been the better team, but it was 50, and they lost that. They were the better team than the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yes.
They barely forced it to a Game 5 with one of the more miraculous comebacks you'll ever see in a postseason game, and there is absolutely no doubt that they were miles better than the Montreal Canadiens from a season ago. So it is fair to criticize those postseason series and their lack of success in the postseason. it won't be fair necessarily to criticize their play if they get out of the gate slowly, because that happens in this league. It does.
And sometimes there's a happy ending, right? Sometimes there's a happy ending after the slow start, and really October hockey doesn't matter that much in the end. But the difference, I would say, the difference is that there's a sense of kind of the master plan here, right? The grand design that this, you know, that has played out since the year of tanking, that this was all leading up to. The culmination of this would be that finally there would be a parade in Toronto because they would draft the best guy, mm-hmm. and they would draft high for a couple of years, and then smart people would run the team and they would not make the mistakes of the past, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If that does not start, if it starts to look like less like that is about to happen, you know, and meanwhile, by the way, the guy they, you know, when they had the choice, right, where they had, well, we can have Mark Hunter, or yeah. we can have Kyle Dubas, or we can have the old dude. Like, he's still chugging along, right? His team's pretty good.
They're not bad.
They're not bad. I think the focus is not going to be necessarily on what's wrong with, you know, any number of players and their contracts, but it's going to be higher than that.
I think so, too. And, you know, we referenced this great piece by Emily Kaplan on ESPN.com a number of different times, and I'm reminded of another anecdote out of there, not from Austin Matthews, and it's right up on Austin Matthews, but it's Kyle Dubas talking about the fan base of the Toronto Maple Leafs at this point in time feeling like Red Sox fans between 99 and 2003.
Mm-hmm.
This is a pretty deep cavern of sadness that they were in 2003. When Aaron Boone took Tim Wakefield over the wall in left field, and Grady Little's leaving Pedro Martinez in way too long.
Yeah.
But here's the one difference is that in 2004, well, first of all, it was also the cavern of sadness was very deep in 2004 when they were down 3-0 to the New York Yankees, but also they did the thing that Kyle Dubas has yet to do and maybe won't need to do. But they traded away Nomar Garciaparra.
Yep, they did.
In 2004.
That is a great point.
And Orlando Cabrera was a huge part of winning that World Series, both defense, like just everything.
And Nomar Garciaparra was Mr. Red Sox at that point, essentially, right?
When he had his whatever wrist surgery, I think they broadcast it live on Boston television, right?
Yeah.
Like nobody was Mr. Red Sox. Nomar! And they said, to get where we need to go, you need to go away. And it resulted in a championship. And maybe, you know, we're just playing the results here. All I can tell you is that's what happened. And I'm not saying that it's a direct comparable. And obviously we're talking about two very different sports, both in how it's played and salary structure. One's a cap league and one's not.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a pretty big moment to get over some of the stuff that does surround this team, fan anxiety, all of that. And it took a massive, massive move, one that I'm sure in retrospect, it's viewed as like universally praised. But in the moment, I can't believe trading away Nomar Garciaparra was viewed all that favorably.
Well, by a fan base that had not, you know, in living memory, seen a World Series, right? Like, again,
correct.
So there was not any reason to have great faith that it would work out because nothing had worked out. But I think that part of it's a pretty good comparable. I'm not sure about the part that Dubas was referencing, as though
the storm's just going to pass and
it's going to work, right?
Yeah.
Because you can't run it back after this year, right? This is the last running it back year.
I would think.
It is.
Okay, and if they do, well, first of all, if it's a new guy, he's not going to run it back.
No.
And I don't think it's going to be Kyle Dubas if they don't, one, make the playoffs or win a round. And winning a round, okay, maybe you buy yourself a little bit there, but yeah. Oh, it's a fascinating, fascinating mm-hmm. sports story. So yeah, ESPN, that story on ESPN.com, the Austin Matthews one, still on the front page. It's the third story down.
Yes.
And I get it. There's not a ton going on today, but it led the website yesterday, Stephen. ESPN returned to broadcasting National Hockey League games yesterday. TNT's turn today, by the way. Wayne Gretzky making his broadcasting debut.
Hot takes coming.
Yeah. So he's gonna be flaming people left and right tonight. Gary Bettman, in an interview I saw today on Twitter, and it was like one of those conferences, you know, where they get all the commissioners up and they ask him various questions. But he was asked about the relationship with the National Hockey League. in ESPN. He said, quote, if ESPN is half as good at promoting us as they were at freezing us out when they didn't have our rights, this is going to be great.
Good for Gary. That's great. It's, you know, because the weird thing about the ESPN thing, I've been following it with great interest this week, because most of what they're talking about, most of what ESPN is talking about is about ESPN.
Yes.
Right, it's about hockey ended essentially when we stopped doing it.
Right, it's back,
and now it's back because we're doing it. So we're playing our theme song again. So there is hockey again, and wherever, I'm not sure where hockey went in the interim. Somewhere it just disappeared from the landscape, but now it's back, and it's so great now. Even though for all those years, we played it with the cricket score somewhere, right?
Yes.
Yeah, like just somewhere down in the depths of that website. Yeah, you could find, you know, and the folks, I know there's some good folks who covered hockey for them, but they were kind of pushing against the tide, I would say. So, yes, it is about, so, yeah, but they can. I know, look, it's a much more fragmented universe, but, you know, ESPN can kind of dictate what matters still on a given night. They still do have, they're not what they used to be, but they still have a lot of sway in terms of sports consciousness in the United States.
Yeah, how does that translate, though, right? Do they create more eyeballs watching hockey because they, you know, validate the sport again, that it's actually one that, you know, you're not embarrassed or you don't have to joke about, you know, the lack of attention that it gets in the United States now that it's going to be talked on PTI, conceivably?
It's a really, you know, it's an interesting, because this is part of a longer and age-old discussion, right? Because during the, like, hockey in non-traditional markets in America, it's never going to work. You can't sell it in the Sun Belt, et cetera. And I remember someone saying, it's not that these people don't know hockey. They know hockey. They just don't like it, right? They've seen it. They just don't like it, right? So don't pretend. You don't have to introduce them to hockey. They've been introduced.
Yeah.
They made their mind up, right? Except that hockey works in the Sun Belt now, weirdly enough. Like, it doesn't work in South Florida, and there's issues in South Florida, but sure works in Tampa.
Yeah,
right?
Works in Vegas.
Yeah, you know, like
works in Nashville. They've
dropped
to some
it.
Degree.
They've dropped it essentially. So the vision going back to 1989, you know, is sort of, it's, you know, it's sort of happened, right? Like, you can drop a hockey team pretty much anywhere now, and it works. You can sell a hockey team for $500 million. Like, a lot of the stuff that, you know, the stuff we used to talk about, we talked about America and hockey. You know, it's not true anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you can. I think it has more growth potential in some ways in America than it does in Canada, where it's a cultural given and hockey fans are established and it's number one still. But I'm not sure there's a whole lot of people here who aren't immersed, you know, haven't had the opportunity to be immersed in hockey, whether they take it or not. I think in the States you can sex it up a little bit, you know? Like, I think you can make stars out of these guys.
Well,
and that's certainly, you know, that's what that piece was today, right? Austin Matthews is modeling his Gilligan hat and his other snazzy dudes and talking about Justin Bieber, right? Like,
yeah, he's the right
about,
guy to
right?
do it.
Yeah, he's the perfect guy to do it. Yep. And he's an American, by the way. I don't know if you know that.
I've heard. Unfortunately for...
Just playing in the wrong place.
Yeah. Unfortunately for ESPN, I think the franchise that he would probably depart for in free agency might not exist.
Yeah, probably.
By the time he gets to free agency?
That is the counter-argument on the Sunbelt thing, by the way. I know. I understand that. I get that.
I just saw on our screen on Tim and Friends that the Highlanders are in the building.
Excellent.
Was it Glenn Healy down there? Did you see him?
I have not. He's not there now. We're not. But yes, that's good. Tradition is good. It's good. That means the world is back.
Yep.
Back rotating on its axis again.
All right. So, things feeling a little bit more normal today. When we come back, hey, there's also a pretty big soccer game in the city.
Yes.
Which actually at last check had fewer available tickets than the Leaf game. I'll double check that in the break. But Canada against Panama in World Cup qualifying, where 3 points is almost a must. We'll get into that. Adam Schefter is now somehow involved in this John Gruden thing, too, because one of his emails came out. And I want to get your take on the journalistic integrity involved with what we learned about Adam Schefter's reporting today. All that and more coming up next as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Stephen Braun, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. People in the building. It's Scotiabank Arena. Leafs and Montreal Canadiens tonight, 7 o'clock on Sportsnet. New studio as well. Saw the debut of it yesterday. David Amber and the crew doing the games yesterday. Great job by them. Different part of the studio being used today by Carolyn Cameron.
Yes. Have we seen it? Did they show it a little bit? I saw it.
So it's working.
And is it magical?
It looks great. I couldn't take my eyes off it. It's incredible.
It's like space age, apparently.
Yeah.
It's the studio of the future in the present.
All right. Well, that's exciting. Hey, on the back of a 5-game unbeaten run, Toronto FC take on Atlanta United Saturday at BMO Field. We want to send you. Saturday's game will also be celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month, featuring authentic food, music, and other exciting in-stadium elements. Keep in mind, each fan age 12 and older must present proof of full COVID-19 vaccination along with government-issued ID at entry gates to BMO Field. If you want to go, taking caller number 5 right now, 1-888-666-0590, 416-870-0590, and *590 to win a pair of tickets. If you're not the lucky winner but still want to join the action on Saturday, you can purchase tickets to Saturday's match at torontofc.ca/tickets. So a couple of things to follow up on after we talked about John Gruden and the situation that's happening in the NFL right now yesterday. Well, today it was revealed that Adam Schefter was interacting with former Washington football team president Bruce Allen. And when I say interacting, I mean sending him a rough draft of a story that he was writing during the lockout. And as part of the back and forth said, please let me know if you see anything that should be added, changed, tweaked. Thanks, Mr. Editor, for that and the trust. Plan to file this to ESPN about 6 a.m. So telling him exactly what the situation is. I'm not a journalist. I've never really been one. I talk on the radio occasionally, on TV occasionally. You're the journalist. What did you make of the story at first glance?
Well, I acknowledge that there's, you know, that the many lines are blurred, right? Like, let's just be straight about that, right? There's a lot of blurring of lines, you know, like on the face of it, you know, to run a story by a source, you know, run a story by somebody who's presumably has a vested interest in the story and kind of pre-publication and say, what do you think? Have I got anything wrong? Is, you know, it goes against every value you would have, right? It's not, you would never do that. You know, there are, you know, in some aspects of, back in long form journalism, magazine writing, when that was a thing, you know, there were people who were employed as fact checkers who would, but there's an art to that where you call people and ask them questions to verify specific facts in the story, but you don't let them know what's actually in the story because, you would never do that. So, in kind of the black and white world of journalistic ethics that does not exist anymore, that would be wrong. That would be a cardinal sin. But, you know, the folks who kind of exist in that nether world of insiders who, insiders who are employed by rights holders, you know, where there are, you know, all kinds of relationships that are, entwined, it's a little murkier. Again, I will, you know, and Adam Schefter's not apologizing for it, by the way. You know, he's saying this is, of course.
Standard fare.
Of course I would do it standard fare. And who is it? Darren Revelle piped up and said, yeah, I do that all the time.
Uh-huh.
Now, it doesn't shock me with Darren Revelle, but, yeah. But those guys aren't, you know, like, are they, you know, they're not journalists in the old sense. You know, they, like the people who do journalism at ESPN are the guys who on Outside the Lines, mm-hmm. right? They do really good, hardcore investigative stuff. They don't do as much as they used to, but that's kind of, you know, that's kind of the journalism wing of, and again, I'm just using them as an example here because, you know, it's their guy. Like Stephen A. Smith's not a journalist, right? There's a lot of stuff in the sports content world that would not be journalism as we used to define it, which is, you know, independent reporting, arm's length, et cetera, et cetera. You know, that's not, a lot of it's not that. And a lot of the sports content you and I consume is not that anymore. So, yeah, like, I thought it was interesting to me that Schefter is completely unapologetic. And I think probably that's his understanding of the way that gig works. And maybe that's how, you know, he's the guy who broke John Gruden's firing, right? Probably because somebody on the inside, one of the establishment of the National Football League, phoned him and told him. I guess, so do we value that information more? Or do we, in this, you know, in this instant Twitter kind of world where you beat somebody by 30 seconds on a story. That's his stock and trade, right? And he's not going to be, and again, I'm not saying this is wrong. It's just true. Guys like him are not going to pull down the pillars of the National Football League and bring it down around them. That's not what they do.
Yeah.
They're part of the machine, right? They're part of that information machine. They give you football information. They don't give you information generally that is going to shake the foundations. They're mm-hmm. not going to get, you know, if there's ever a scandal that gets Roger Goodell fired, it's not going to come from one of those guys.
The perception of journalists in 2021, the understanding of the role of journalism in 2021, I think if we're taking the broader view, the larger scope is like it's a little bit terrifying the way the Fifth Estate is being viewed, and yeah, part of that are some of the politicians that have been in place. And
yes,
I would say sports journalism I'm less concerned about because it's for the most part, and maybe John Gruden this entire situation is not what I'm talking about, but for the most part it is not going to change anybody's life.
It's mostly pretend, right? Like that's exactly right. It's diversion, it's entertainment. Gives us something to occupy ourselves, you know, as we proceed on the path from birth to death, right? It kind of it sells stuff. It's fun. It gives us kind of a temporary sense of community, which is a good thing, by the way. You know, kind of gives us things to rally around, which I think is a good thing. But no, this is, you know, there's a difference between this and the attack on independent journalism that, you know, took place, you know, at the highest levels of American politics for the last X number of years, and that's a direct threat to democracy. Yeah, those, like Adam Schefter doing this is not a threat to democracy.
Yeah.
That stuff's actually a threat to democracy. The fake news, you know, parroting that stuff.
Yeah, that
means something. This doesn't mean that much.
Adam Schefter reporting about some contract negotiation with a slant towards ownership so that they have a better negotiating edge is not as impactful, but it should be any report from Adam Schefter probably already should have been viewed this way because, like you said, the ESPN and the amount of dollars that are invested in this sport and making sure that the relationship is good, and it's cost some people their jobs. I mean, Bill Simmons was basically excommunicated from ESPN because he talked ill of Roger Goodell. But any time that Adam Schefter has a report, you should have been doing this earlier. But going forward now, you understand that the relationship is not an independent journalist making the best decision for journalism's sake. It is, at the very least, slanted in favor of protecting the shield.
Well, it's like people covering Hollywood, right? It's mm-hmm. like being a Hollywood gossip columnist or something like that, or being, you know, working in that, you know, that stuff's, TMZ's not journalism, right? They break stories, but it's not journalism per se. It's part of kind of that entertainment machine. And it's the churn around it. And this is the churn around the games and the churn around sport. You know, that said, you know, like I'm when they, if we get into those emails, if they ever, and again, I'm not sure they're ever going to see the light of day. And we see that kind of relationship around something like, say, the blackballing of Colin Kaepernick.
Right.
Right. Which is a real world issue.
Yeah.
Right? Is a real world issue.
Well,
then that's not just football stuff, man. Like this, I think the stuff with Bruce Allen was about collective bargaining, right?
Yes, it was during the lockout. He was reporting on, and that's his defense was, yes, I these are complex issues that I don't really understand and that I needed to see. I needed someone to oversee my facts and make sure I had them straight because this is not football. It's negotiation of a CBA.
Me, I wouldn't cover a labor negotiation that way. But, and a sports, you know, maybe a sports labor negotiation is different than, QP or the auto workers, right? But that's not how you cover a labor negotiation, asking management if this is right.
Right.
Unless Maybe ask D. Smith if it was right too. I don't know.
And who gets the last change on that thing?
Exactly. Right. But what if this creeps into, and this, I think this is where we are into a really interesting spot here right now, because of course, you know, the lawyers representing the former employees of the Washington football team who, you know, launched the suit against the team are saying, release these, you know, we want to know what's in there because we don't know what's there. That's a real world situation, right? That, you know, there, that was a, you know, obviously it happened around a sports business, but it was about, you know, harassment and all kinds of horrible stuff that was going on in the workplace. Let's shine the light of day on that. But what about You know, and what about, again, real world stuff here? You know, because John Gruden commented on that, right? I think there's a real sense, you know, that Colin Kaepernick was conspired against. I think, you know, any reasonable person viewing the situation would say there's a conspiracy here. There was a conspiracy to run him out of football. That's not just about football.
Well, let's even just keep it to the topic of the investigation. The Washington football team. Is it possible that Adam Schefter knows some of the details as to why that franchise was levied a $10 million fine? Does that have real world implications? And would you believe if he knew what would be the assumption now after reading this? That he's probably sitting on that information if the league has told him to do so.
Because the guy he, you know, jokingly referred to as Mr. Editor was the guy, right? Was running that team and got fired after that. But yeah, that would imply a relationship where you might want to cover for somebody for sure. Like that, look, that's the danger. And again, we're into real stuff here. Like most of the stuff in sports, fire the coach or any of those things we talk. No, that's not, none of that plays to the fundamentals, right? It just doesn't. But if you're saying someone's crooked, you know, or if you're saying people conspired against someone because of their political views, or if the place, you know, if there's a racist culture that's being protected, that stuff's real, you know, on one hand, Adam Schefter, sure, it doesn't matter. Who cares? But we're creeping towards something here where, you know, it probably does matter. Yeah. And you saw that again, you got a little window into that with those Gruden emails. Cause it wasn't, you know, obviously again, yes, he's a creep and he's a football coach. Thank God he's not, you know, he wasn't running the country. Although, you know, would have been that different. But what about, you know, what's the extension of that attitude and how it played out, you know, during those moments after Kaepernick or during those moments when players were kneeling and being attacked by the then president of the United States? Like I think if you connect those dots, we get to a place where a whole lot of people could be implicated. And, you know, again, people who are kind of playing at being journalists, you know, and think it's harmless and it's sports and et cetera, are going to look really, really bad.
Yeah. Well, and here's hoping that there are still some real journalists left that will bring whatever needs to come to light.
I just don't know. We talked about this, Ben. I'm not sure. Like, somebody's going to have to sue those.
Yeah.
You know, that this is going to have to. The only way those things are going to see the light of day is if that lawsuit, you know, if the lawyers for the, you know, the former employees of the Washington football team or somebody else who has, you know, or maybe, you know, lawyers representing Colin Kaepernick, you know, if there's a way, if you can make a legitimate case that there's stuff in there that is going to play to a legal matter, you might have a shot going to court. But, you know, because otherwise this stuff, you know, there's no kind of sunshine stuff. There's no right to see it.
No.
You know, it's not public record. A lot of stuff in the United States, you can get a 911 call, you know, made public the next day. This doesn't fall into that category. But there are ways that wedges may be driven in here. And I kind of think they're going to be.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're going to be. And talk about Pandora's box. We talked about this. If those emails were leaked just to get rid of John Gruden, and I'm not, you know, and John Gruden should be gotten rid of. But if somebody said, oh, just leak 10 of these because that'll take care of this guy who we want out. Be careful what you wish for, right?
No doubt. Roger Goodell might have some regrets.
Yes.
On a lighter note.
Yes.
Canada's World Cup hopes are seemingly on the line tonight. I overstated only a little bit, though, because these are three massive points down at BMO Field that they need to get against a team that they will be battling for third in CONCACAF. Mm-hmm. And it's the top three in the table that advance to the World Cup next November in Qatar. I'm Qatar today, not Qatar.
Okay.
Panama on the road. This is a team that just beat the United States at home.
Yes.
1-0. This feels like the biggest game that we've had, and I would have said the last home game here would have been the biggest one that they came up large in a 3-0 win over El Salvador. This has the potential tonight to be one of the depending on how positive and optimistic you are, one of the more spectacular nights in this country's soccer history.
Yeah, there's a long way to go because this thing isn't going to wrap up till March, and they have some horrible road trips, and there's a bunch of stuff that's going to happen, but everybody, look, it's not just conventional wisdom. It's true. You got to take care of business at home in these things. 3 points at home. you know, like they're going to go to Panama at the end of March. I don't know what's going to happen. Probably not, you know, like
yeah,
you better hope you're not going there and needing three. So yeah, you got to take care of business tonight. The El Salvador game, they put it out of reach almost instantly. They took care of business and it still got ugly. You were at the Honduras game. You saw what that was like playing against a not very good Honduras team, but they made it ugly and they held them to a draw. They kind of got to get out on the front foot and get a lead in this match and not get sucked in. They're not going to be totally at full strength, which is unfortunate. There's going to be a ton of there. I'm sure I don't know how many Panamanian Canadians there are in Toronto. I bet there's a lot because there are a lot of Salvadorans, it turned out.
Yes.
So there's going to be a split crowd. That's just the nature of the city. That's a good thing, by the way, that, you know, the city is.
No, I love that point. Yeah. When the Canadian players come out and say, we need more Canadians to outnumber the other team that we're playing, you don't. It's a good thing that we kind of have a split crowd because
they're all Canadians, right? It's
they
just
are.
Some of them have, you know, old country roots. But yeah, look, this is, it's massive. And we, you know, we're very bullish on this team. You know, if they take care of business tonight, I think if they're held to a draw tonight, there's still lots of ways they can qualify. If you lose tonight, that's going to be tough.
What is the moment for this team in qualifying? Is it Osorio's goal in Mexico City to draw that match and eventually hold on? Is it a moment beyond that? I'm trying to remember the goal. Oh, you know, it was a spectacular run by Alphonso Davies in Nashville that set up the tying goal. Again, two times they've had to not just pull away or pull off impressive draws against the United States and Mexico on the road, but come back in both games, right? Those two teams opened up the scoring in those games. Alphonso Davies has looked the part. Like, don't get me wrong, he's looked spectacular, and the amount of attention that he gets in all these games, it opens everything up. And he had the assist on the Osorio goal as well in Mexico City. Love to see just, you know, that guy actually do something spectacular individually and score the goal that's the difference maker tonight.
It would be awesome. Now, you're also going to see the Panamanians chop him down.
I know.
And you're going to see them flop and writhe in agony and plead their case to the referee and drive everybody nuts and try and slow the game down to a crawl and get everybody mad. And so just be ready for it. Like the notion that like the chance of this game be kind of flowing and beautiful.
Yeah.
It's unlikely.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see which is a more flowing and beautiful game down at Scotiabank Arena between the Montreal Canadiens and the Toronto Maple Leafs, again, opening up their season in mirror moments on Sportsnet, and we have both games because on Sportsnet 1 you can watch Canada and Panama. But yeah, as much goodwill as the Canadian soccer team has earned, and they've earned it, they've been great, and it's not just the results, it's they've looked the part, especially in Mexico City. It's kind of a game-to-game thing, and I didn't expect it to be that way. 3 points in Jamaica might have made it feel a little less gut-wrenching tonight. But it's gut-wrenching.
It's going to be tense. First goal matters. And, you know, there's nothing like cheering for your country.
Absolutely. So if you're headed down to BMO Field, enjoy the game. If you're headed down to Scotiabank Arena to be maybe one of the close to 20,000 fans in attendance, enjoy that because it was a long time between being able to experience those sporting events with a bunch of people. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. We'll talk about the results of both of those games. This has been the Fan Drive Time. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.